Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
Well, good morning. I'm back in the studio with you, live and local on this Monday morning. I'm Bob Flott. We have live and local in our studio with us this morning. We have Matt Cuba. Matt is the Cultural Resource Manager, 49th Wing, Civil Engineer Squadron, Holloman Air Force Base. Matt, good morning.
Morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing hunky-dory this morning. Glad to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
You betcha. Good to have you here. You've had a busy morning this morning.
So far, yes.
So far?
Yes.
What about the rest of the day?
Back to Holloman and back to the normal everyday tasks.
And
the
work and having fun.
Exactly, exactly.
But I think you have a fun job.
Most of the time, it can be interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Well, you've had an interesting career. Tell us a little bit about Matt.
I grew up in a small town in Missouri and ended up in Austin, Texas for a few years. Then middle 2000s, I ended up here in southern New Mexico, and I love this place.
Very good. How did you end up here?
I was looking for adventure. I had a degree, an undergraduate degree in anthropology, and started doing archaeological survey as a field tech.
Yeah. Now, you know, how did you become interested in, I guess, that discipline?
I'd like to say it was this really magnificent origin story, but no, I was looking for adventure. Archaeological survey really did it for me when I was younger. And pretty quickly I realized I had a knack for it.
Very good. Yeah. Now, what are some of the earlier memories then you have?
Really, really hot days in Carlsbad. I've traveled most of the state working. It's always something. And being broken down on the side of the road, you name it, it's happened.
Right. Is it our state of New Mexico rich in that history?
Yes. And there are very few places that the archaeological record is so well preserved as it is in New Mexico.
Right. And it's preserved because of our arid climate, a lack of moisture. What's the reason?
The biggest reason is actually the ownership of the land by the Department of Defense. Although the land was put aside for military testing or Holloman Air Force Base, it inadvertently protected that archaeological record. So now the best preserved archaeological records remain on these DOD lands.
Uh-huh. So that's a good thing for preserving this unique history.
Absolutely. Folks working on the missile range in Holloman, they've got other tasks they need to do.
Right.
And so they're focused on completing the mission.
That's why they have you there.
Exactly.
To do that other work. Now, do you have a team working with you?
Yes, sir. I'm part of the Civil Engineer Squadron, 49th Civil Engineer Squadron, and I'm on the environmental flight. And the folks I get to work with are top of their game, and I could not have done what I did without their help. They're a really great group of people.
Now you've named this new discovery the Gomalak site, right?
Yes,
Gomalak
sir.
Site?
Gomalak Overlook.
Oh, Gomalak.
Yes, sir.
Gomalak. I know a Gomalak here in Alamogordo.
The probably JR, perhaps?
Well, I know a K Gomalak.
His better half.
Okay, good enough. Very
yes.
good.
Yes.
And it's Gomalak.
Gomalak, yes, sir.
You're Gomalak. Okay, very good. You taught me something already this morning. You're going to teach me a lot more before we're done with this.
I hope so.
And everything else. You betcha. Now, we can't talk specifically about where this site is at Holloman Air Force Base, I guess, but tell us a little bit about the discovery of that site.
The site was originally discovered last year, right about this time, early May, by two visiting geoarchaeologists from the University of Arizona. They were at Holloman looking at an unrelated project and were driving around and drove past a road cut and observed artifacts eroding out of the road cut and notified me.
Now, when they observed artifacts, what did they see?
The first artifact they saw was a groundstone, a mono. So think mortar and pestle. It was the pestle portion, but round and polished from use. And when they noticed it, there was a question as to whether or not it was in situ, so in place. Did it erode to that location, or was it eroded out, but still in its location where it was deposited? So we did some testing. We optically stimulated, we used optically stimulated luminescence dating to date the soils. And then when we actually encountered the archaeological features, the preservation is so great that we were able to date the charcoal that remains in those features.
Now, how do you survey the ground to determine the age of what's around it?
The biggest thing is radiocarbon dating, optically stimulated luminescent, these types of processes that give us an idea of when soils were buried, when archaeological sites were inhabited with the charcoal remains. And more importantly, you have to back up and look at the bigger picture and make sure that it fits within that larger context.
Right. So this find is basically at ground level, or is it beneath the ground as well?
This site is buried 6 feet deep.
6 feet, all right.
So there's no manifestation of the site on the current ground surface. So it's amazing that we were able to find it by luck at all.
Do you think in our daily life, like I love the outdoors, I love the woods, love White Sands National Park now and everything, but do you think in our daily lives of maybe hiking the mountains or walking around, we might come across some kind of a unique archaeological site and don't really know what we're looking at?
Absolutely. And I do want to say, if you do come across a site, your best bet is to just leave it be. If it's on public land, you need to notify the BLM or Forest Service, whoever manages that land, and notify them. Archaeological resources are easily disturbed, and once they're disturbed, you've destroyed a lot of that context, and that is what's most important to me as an archaeologist. Yeah.
Now, we have other sites around the Alamogordo-Otero County area as well, don't we?
Yes, there's thousands.
There's one out here just a little bit.
On
North Florida, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The one out there, back in.
Yep.
I've got a chance to tour that coming up this summer.
Oh, you'll love it.
You know, I'm going to make a tour of that and everything else. Now, so this site is 6 feet under. Did you run into any water content? Because what I've heard from White Sands National Park is the water surface is just a few feet below the ground level. Is that correct?
For the national park, yes. The site is located at the very tip of the Sacramento Mountain alluvial fan. So our site on Holloman is probably 10 to 20 feet higher in elevation than most of White Sands National Park. So we didn't run into any water problems, but I know if we were to keep going, we would hit groundwater pretty quickly.
Pretty well preserved. Now, there have been some other sites around Holloman Air Force Base as well.
Yes, we have. On Holloman, there's about 400 archaeological sites that we've recorded thus far, and they range from 12 to 13,000 years ago to Cold War buildings on Holloman proper. So there's a well-documented archaeological record on Holloman.
So Matt Cuba, once you discover those places, how do you protect them? That's one of my concerns I have. I know you can cordon them off, do this, but how do you keep the public away from them?
That's actually the easiest part, working on Holloman, because access is so strict.
Exactly, on Holloman,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the Air Force does it for me.
Right.
So, thankfully, I don't have a lot of those problems. The area is already restricted access. And so now that we know where the site is, we know how big it is, we're focused on keeping away the few people that are out there away from it and keep them from impacting the site in any way.
Now, the discovery of this site, what does it tell us about 8,600 years ago in this area?
We know a couple things. There's only two sites attributable to this time period in the southern part of the state, so we know very little, but broader picture, we know that the environment was changing at the end of the Pleistocene. The environment was becoming drier, a little warmer, and so resources were changing. And this site really hits the mark on hitting that transition between the Pleistocene to the Holocene, switching subsistence patterns. we know that the more than likely the sites were seasonally occupied and people were moving from resource patch to resource patch throughout the year.
Yeah. And of course, you determine the age to be about 8,600 years ago and everything. And you did mention how you determined that. What else was unique about that discovery? You talked about the man or the charcoal?
Yeah. The level of preservation is what's most astounding. We have very few archaeological sites that date that old. There, about 5,000 years ago, there was what we call the Alta Thermal, and it was very dry. Most of those older sites were destroyed during that time period. So to find a site that was protected during that time period, and all of these remains were preserved, what we can learn from this site is we don't even know all of what we can learn from
the research
site.
Is just beginning.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And so right now our focus is on preservation. As archaeology keeps developing, there's going to be new processes, new ways to look at stuff. And so we want to make sure that the site's there for when these new processes are developed and we can study it in even more depth.
Now other sites that might have been damaged or no longer preserved, would they have been damaged by weather conditions mainly or human traffic? What could be the cause?
The majority of the sites, it was natural causes. We're in a desert.
Right.
Erosion is that's your biggest problem. And most of the sites were pretty severely eroded during the Alta Thermal.
So this site has been discovered. It's 8,600 years old. It's at Holloman Air Force Base. And you've got to preserve that site and everything. What has really been done to make sure that stays intact?
We've delineated the site, meaning we figured out the geographic extent of it so we know what area we need to protect.
And how big would that area be?
It's about 80 meters in its greatest dimension, so 250 feet, give or take.
Good-sized site.
Yes, so average size, I'd say. Once again, we know so little about this time period. A lot of what I'm basing my assumptions on is the one other site that we have that it's dated to this time period.
So you've got the site that they're well protected and everything. What's our next option? What are we going to be doing with that site?
Right now, we're focused on preservation. We've stabilized the road cut so that additional erosion won't impact the site. And right now, we just monitor, make sure that the site remains preserved. There's no impact to it. There's no human impact to it at all. And for now, it's just set aside and preserved as it is.
Yeah, you mentioned the fact about discovering a charcoal, I think you said, one of the things and everything else. What does that tell you about 8,600 years ago?
So the charcoal that we dated, we did an ID on it, and it came back as mesquite. So when we're looking at an environment that is becoming warmer and drier, what was the plant community like 8,200 years ago? Do we know what these people were utilizing? We think that they were more than likely utilizing a lot more seeds and processing that for food. And this is really that first introduction of relying on seeds and processing seeds for food. And that's where the importance of the groundstone comes in.
Does that tell us that White Sands National Park was actually forming there back then?
At 8,200 years ago, the White Sands Dune Field was not there yet. So okay. When people were living at the site, they would not have seen the White Sands Dune Field like we do today.
Okay. And of course, back then, the people were nomadic.
Yes.
They would go to this one spot, use up all the resources around it, move to another spot, use up those, and kept moving around.
Yes. And they would jump from, in the spring, you would go to this location in the summer, you would move to another,
exactly,
wherever the resources are the most abundant.
Yeah. Does that tell you that the early settlers, whatever you want to call them, you know, but they were nomadic. Were they farmers?
They were not farmers. They were hunter-gatherers. And so when you look at hunter-gatherer populations, they're looking to maximize their their efforts. So you want to move to the most logical resource patch, and that was more than likely a wetland. Wetlands are very, very productive patches for food and seeds and animals, and jump from resource patch to resource patch as conditions dictate.
I just wonder, trying to think back that many years, what was the environment like? What was the vegetation like way back then? It must have been healthy.
It was quite a bit different. We know coming out of the Pleistocene, things were much wetter in the Pleistocene. We think that most of the basin was a very productive grassland. You read accounts from the late 1800s settlers that talk about grass up to your chest.
Right.
And I suspect it was more similar to that than what we see today.
Right. I know the early settlers coming across the Sacramento Mountains, looked into the valley, saw those beautiful cottonwood trees, knew there was a water source close at hand, mm-hmm. saw the grass that was up to the horses' bellies, basically, and higher, knew that we could make a good settlement here and survive.
Exactly. And so I think it was far more similar to that than what we see today. And there was probably more runoff from the mountains, making it down to the basin floor and these wetland patches. And you see it in the Great Basin further west. Groups move from patch to patch to patch throughout the year.
So with this discovery, does that bring any confidence to you, Matt Cuba, that there are more discoveries out there that we need to find?
Absolutely. We know that the site was buried by the actual formation of the White Sand Dunes.
Right.
And so there's a large geographic area that has that Paleo-Indian early archaic landscape's been covered. We just last year found Gamalic Overlook, and it's the canary in the coal mine. It's telling you there's more down there. So now we need to change how we do our compliance, how we look at these landforms, and do a little bit deeper investigation than we have done in the past.
So how do you change probably a well-established routine on these discoveries? How do you work in change?
The first part is having the proof that you need to change. Gamalic Overlook gives us that. So now I'm developing a predictive model where you would expect to see settlements of this age, and that will guide your subsurface testing, looking for similar sites and even older sites.
Right. All right. Now, do you ever do any programs around the area?
I've done a few over the years. A lot of work with the different archaeology days.
Right.
Worked with NMSU on some things. And yeah, however I can help out and get the word out that archaeology is really amazing, lack of a better term.
It's really interesting for sure. Looking at that site, what does that tell you about the human race back then?
I think it really shows us that people are highly adaptive. As the environment changes, these people clearly were able to change with it and make a good living on the resources that were available. And it also shows how in tune they were. Stuff that worked, subsistence activities that worked 1,000 years ago no longer work.
Right.
And so these people were able to come together and make a go of it, and clearly did a good job because the basin was occupied for the next 8,000 years.
Yeah. They had to have fantastic engineering minds.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what we hope to see in, you know, the assemblage of tools we found at the site. We can see that these reduction continuums, where the making of stone tools, that process changed through time.
Right.
And with Gamalic Overlook, we can see that change, I hate to say in real time, but this site documents that transitional period.
Yeah. You've got an interesting career, my friend.
Well, thank you. I love sharing it. This has all been a real treat for me to come on and talk to you about it and share a little bit of what we do at Holloman.
Right. We're glad to find all that good information out, for sure. Any closing comments?
I'd just like to say that the Air Force isn't known for archaeology. They they're more known for training fighter pilots. But at the same time, the Air Force does a really amazing job of protecting these unique resources.
Yeah, they're known for training fighter pilots. And also they're known for June the 2nd, the Thunderbirds at our Legacy of Liberty Air Show.
Yes.
And we're looking forward to that.
I am too.
All right. Thanks, Matt, for being here this morning.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.